We are in the second sermon message in our series for Lent, the Messiah Dialogues, looking at some powerful, transforming conversations that Jesus had with somebody. And my hope is that as we look at these conversations, we'll not only see Jesus in dialogue with a biblical character, but perhaps insert ourselves into the story and maybe even hear Jesus speaking to us. The title for today's message is Love is Blind, or Love is Blind as a question mark. And the title is taken from the reality dating TV show by the same name. Who would have thought that several decades ago that reality TV would become such a popular medium? Now, it's debatable just how much reality there is on reality TV, or that the most popular expression of reality TV would be reality TV dating shows like The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, Married at First Sight, Love Island, The Perfect Match, Love is Blind, which all follow sort of the same basic formula. They're all hetero couples, as far as I know. What's up with that? But there it is. And we have, you know, beautiful people coming together to thrown into this kind of posh environment that probably doesn't represent their day-to-day life to find their life partner, their perfect match in the other among the other contestants. Now, I have paid virtually no attention to reality dating television. I've maybe seen a few episodes of The Bachelor years ago, until I got COVID. And then I found myself with like lots of extra time on my hands in quarantine, and I was, you know, just kind of looking at Netflix, and I saw this thing, Love is Blind. Well, that's an interesting title, Love is Blind. Let's see what that's about. So I watched the first episode, and then I watched the second episode, and the third, and the fourth. I sped my way through some of them, but before I knew it, I had watched the entire first season of Love is Blind. And then I watched the next season, the third season, and then I watched Love is Blind Brazil. And anyway, I don't know if you know the concept, but Love is Blind, people are getting to know each other without seeing each other. They're interacting, they're having dates between the screen where you can't see the other person, and so you're forced to judge people and find out who you connect with simply by who the person is, not by what they look like. And then they get engaged, and only then, after they're engaged, do they see each other face-to-face, which is this big reveal moment, and then they continue to get to know each other and meet each other's families, and then by the last episode, maybe they get married on the show. I mean, it's a crazy principle and idea, but I got kind of into it. I mean, in spite of myself, this is a safe space, right? This doesn't leave the room. I'm not proud to admit all this. Anyway, but, you know, I found myself really connecting with some characters and like really not connecting with other people and rooting for some couples like, oh, they're going to make it. And this other couple like, no, stop now. This is going to be a disaster, which I guess is the whole point of the show. You get connected to the people and you wonder if your predictions about them are going to turn out to be correct or not. Well, one of the couples that I was cheering for are still married 5 years later, Lauren and Cameron. They live right here in Atlanta. In fact, my daughter happened to see them walking their dog a couple of months ago. So go, Cameron and Lauren. Keep up the good work. They now have their own reality TV show, a YouTube channel, which suggests that if you meet your life partner on TV, you've got to stay on television to, you know, keep the fire going. Well, needless to say, there was no genre called reality, you know, dating in the time of Jesus. But wouldn't you love to see that episode or season of The Bachelor, right? Or maybe not. Maybe that's not what we want to see at all. However, in the ancient world, the motif of a man and a woman meeting at a well was a well-established romantic scene or setup or trope. We see this in the Bible several times. We see it in other cultures and in literature in the ancient world. This a couple meeting at the well is kind of a kickoff to some sort of romantic relationship, which makes Jesus' encounter with this Samaritan woman at the well really interesting. I mean, it appears intentional. It feels almost scripted. It says that Jesus was on his way to Galilee, and in order to get to Galilee, he had to go through Samaria to get there. Except that he didn't. He didn't have to go through Samaria to get to Galilee based on where he was. In fact, it was very common for people at that time to go way out of their way, adding days to their journey just to avoid going through Samaria, just to avoid walking through that neighborhood or being forced to encounter those people. Now, what was it about Samaritans that made them so like pariah-like and objectionable and not wanting to be around these people? Well, Samaritans used to be Israelites. Israelites that had intermarried with Canaanite people outside of their country and intermingled their religion. So they were people of mixed religion and people of mixed ethnicity. And therefore, to the Judeans at the time, they were a threat. They were a risk. They were seen as half-breeds. They were seen as mongrels, somebody to avoid at all costs. You know the story of the Good Samaritan. We call that one the Good Samaritan to distinguish him from all the other Samaritans we know are bad, right? I mean, that's the reputation that Samaritans had at the time. Now, Jesus apparently didn't care about any of that. He went right into Samaria and has this conversation which crossed several lines. A Judean speaking to a Samaritan, a man speaking to a woman alone, which once again at the well was, you know, the singles club of the ancient world. Now, in a very interesting way, Jesus has sort of met his match at the well in a respect. Not only does he show chutzpah in going to the well and having this conversation alone with a woman in Samaria, she did to him. She is a strong person. She interrogates him, like, what are you doing talking to me? And they have this marvelous conversation. As you may be aware, the Bible does not exactly center the voices and the perspectives of women. In fact, only 1.1% of all verses in the Bible were spoken by women. And yet, this conversation, this dialogue between Jesus and the Samaritan woman is the longest conversation that Jesus has anywhere in the New Testament. Longer than he has a conversation with any disciple, any of the disciples, with his family, with his accusers. The longest conversation Jesus has with anybody is with this woman. Moreover, she is the first person to whom Jesus reveals his identity as the Messiah in the Gospel of John. That's a big deal. And maybe the most striking and the most scandalous thing about this woman is she becomes the first preacher of the gospel. I used to think, until this week, this only occurred to me this week, that it was the women who encountered Jesus at the resurrection, at the tomb, who then go and spread the good news, that they were the first preachers. But no, the Samaritan woman has them beat. She went back to her village and told everybody about Jesus and this transforming conversation that she had with him. And that makes her the very first preacher, a woman and a Samaritan at that, of the gospel. Meanwhile, half the church globally today still will not allow women to preach. Well, take that up with Jesus, take that up with the Samaritan woman. And even more lamentable, you know, we have the first female preacher. Well, we've got to do something about that, said tradition. And so she has been cast and discredited as a harlot for having a past, for a relationship history, for having been involved with several men, to being married to several different men. And tradition has decided, perhaps to discredit her as the first preacher, that she was a loose woman, that she, you know, she had a reputation, she had a past. Well, That is ridiculous, because a woman in those days, and according to Jewish law, could not divorce her husband. She had been divorced. She had been left. She had been abandoned. She had been put aside. We don't know why. We can only speculate, and we probably shouldn't. She had been divorced by her husband, or a husband, 5 times. And Jesus somehow sees that and knows that, and as he mentions that, he is not shaming her. He is not blaming her. He is simply saying, I see how much pain there is in your life. I see that you have been abandoned 5 times. I see what you have been through. I see your heart. And because of that, of being seen and being loved anyway, this woman is overwhelmed and goes home and tells everyone about this incredible conversation. There is no condemnation, no requirement for repentance, nothing about anything she has done wrong. It's all about her experience and her pain. Isn't that what we all want? Like, don't we all want someone who sees us just as we are in all of our complexity, sees our pain, the things that we've been through, who doesn't go around, try to avoid us, but goes right to us and sees us and loves us anyway? I mean, at one level, that's the last thing we want, for our soul to be laid that bare. But isn't what we want underneath that is for somebody to see us and to love us and to not abandon us, as she had been abandoned so many times? What could be more liberating? This all leads me to wonder, what is it about us as human beings that causes us to rush, to condemn, to judge, to exclude people who are, you know, a mix of more than one thing? Why is it that we as people want to put people in one particular category and say, stay there, don't step out of it? Whether it's the Samaritans, who were both Judeans and Canaanites, you know, of mixed ethnicity, of mixed race, or today, you've got to be Democrat or Republican, you can't be somewhere in between. You got to be man or a woman, you can't be in between. You can't be neither. God forbid you put on clothes of a different gender. You have to be gay or straight, not both. You have to be this race or that race, not both. You have to be this religion or that religion. You can't be interfaith. Why are we so afraid of people having multiple identities? I don't really know. I mean, I have some theories I won't get into right now, but what I do know is that Jesus was not into putting people into these strict buckets and categories and saying, stay there, stay in your lane. Maybe because Jesus also was a person who had a hybrid identity as divine and yet human, as someone who was the product of an illegitimate child, at least by all appearances. He knew the pain of being excluded and castigated and marginalized based on the conditions of his birth and his identity. Jesus today sees your pain, and isn't full of blame or shame, simply sees it, sees who you are, sees who we are, and holds us and loves us to transform us into newness of life, and then sends us out to do likewise. I mean, at the end of the day and at the end of the sermon, this story is about a person who encountered somebody else at the watering hole, at the water fountain, at the grocery store, and was able to see them for who they are, recognize their pain, and not push them away, but to embrace them and to love them. Are we called to do anything less? Now, the idea of walking up to everybody in the grocery store with that kind of intention might feel like a bit much. That may not be where we go. But still, that is what our call is as people who desire to follow Jesus, to mirror that same transforming presence and love. Jesus invites us to see ourselves in each other through eyes of love, not judgment. And salvation, it seems, at least according to the story, begins with clear, tender, unconditional love and seeing. Which means, I think, love is not blind. In fact, love might be the only thing that truly sees. Amen. Ashe. Namaste.